Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope on Egypt. Pope Benedict says he was deeply saddened by the violence in Egypt that killed 26 Christian protesters and spoke of his concern over attempts to undermine the peaceful coexistence between the nation's different communities. Iraq Insight. We shine the spotlight on Iraq and its dwindling Christian community in the run-up to the first anniversary of the bloody church siege in Baghdad that killed over 50 Christians, and discover what has changed since that day. Saving Somalia. As the church steps up its own relief operation to help the victims of the famine and drought in the Horn of Africa, we examine the mistakes that were made by the international community in the run-up to the current crisis, and ask whether the necessary lessons have been learned. And no to executions. We talk to the Catholic lay group Sant'Egidio that campaigns against the death penalty about the progress made to convince nations to join the abolition bandwagon. Pope Benedict said he was deeply saddened by the violence in Egypt that killed 26 Christian demonstrators and spoke of his concern over attempts to undermine the peaceful coexistence between the nation's different communities. He appealed to the Egyptian authorities to build a society where the human rights of all people are respected, especially those of minorities. The Pope's remarks came at the end of his Wednesday general audience. Lydia Kane tells us more.
In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti.
Thousands of pilgrims and tourists from as far away as Malaysia, Indonesia, Australia and the United States took up their positions in an autumnal St. Peter's Square for the Pope's weekly general audience. It was against the unmistakable backdrop of St. Peter's Basilica on Wednesday that the Holy Father spoke of his deep sadness at the violence which engulfed the Egyptian capital Cairo last Sunday.
Sono profondamente rattristato dagli episodi di violenza che sono stati commessi al Cairo domenica scorsa.
26 people, mostly Coptic Christians, were killed when a peaceful protest by Christians demonstrating over an earlier attack on a church in southern Egypt turned violent. The Pope said he was united in sorrow with the families of the victims and with the Egyptian people, who, he said, were being torn apart by attempts to undermine the peaceful coexistence between communities in the country.
Mi unisco al dolore delle famiglie delle vittime e dell'intero popolo egiziano.
Pope Benedict underlined the importance of preserving that coexistence, especially, he said, at this time of transition, and he urged the faithful to pray so that Egypt can enjoy a true peace based on justice, respect for freedom, and the dignity of every citizen. The Holy Father also expressed his support for the efforts of the Egyptian authorities, both civil and religious, to bring about a society which respects the human rights of all its citizens, and in particular minorities. During the audience, those waiting to hear the next instalment of the Pope's catechesis on Christian prayer were not disappointed. This week, Pope Benedict turned his attention to Psalm 126.
This psalm is a joyful prayer of thanksgiving for God's fidelity to his promises in bringing about Israel's return from the Babylonian exile. The Lord has done great things for us, and we rejoiced. A similar spirit of joy and thanksgiving should mark our own prayer, as we recall the care which God has shown to us in the events of our lives, even those which seem dark and bitter.
The Holy Father went on to explain that the psalm demonstrates our faithful passage from darkness to light.
The psalmist implores God to continue to grant Israel his saving help. May those who sow in tears reap with shouts of joy. This imagery of the seed which silently grows to maturity reminds us that God's salvation is at once a gift already received and the object of our hope. a promise whose fulfillment remains in the future. Jesus will use the same imagery to express a passage from death to life, from darkness to light, which must take place in the lives of all who put their faith in him and share in his paschal mystery.
Also making reference to Psalm 126 and speaking off the cuff in Italian, the Pope said it was important to remember the good things we are given by God, because it is these gifts that can sustain us in dark times. Before giving greetings in English to visitors, including members of the NATO Defence College, the Pope and the whole of St. Peter's Square was treated to a performance by St. Mary's Cathedral Choir, who had come all the way from Sydney, Australia. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
This month sees the first anniversary of the bloody church siege in the Iraqi capital that killed over 50 people and prompted dozens of Christian families to flee Baghdad. But a year on from that deadly attack, what has changed for the country's dwindling Christian community, and how do they see their future? To gain some insight into the hopes and fears of the nation's Christian community, I sat down with an Iraqi priest from Baghdad, Father Albert Zarazia, who is currently studying in Rome. I began by asking him how difficult daily life is for the Iraqi people.
Can't say that the situation in Iraq is improved in these years, because there are still the bombs, the killing, the
kidnapping. So there's a lot of insecurity.
Yes, a lot of insecurity in the daily life. Every day we hear about the bombs in everywhere, especially in the capital, in Baghdad.
Is it safe to go out on the streets at night, for instance?
It's not safe, especially after these streets that where there was some explosions or there are some bombs. It's not safe to go out in night.
And what about sectarian tensions in general? Do the Iraqi people feel that these are improving?
Especially from the point of the services, for example, the electricity, the water, this is the essential things, is not provided in adequate way.
So there's still many power cuts, for instance.
Yes, so many power cuts. And then the most important thing is they lose is the security, is this thing, because they don't feel the security in the streets, neither in their homes.
Coming back to sectarian tensions, what kind of contacts have you always had with Iraqis of other faiths? Do you, for instance, have any Muslim friends in Iraq?
Yes, we have a good relationships, really, with the Muslims. So this bad situation that we live now is not related at our relation with the Muslims. It's related with something that comes from another reasons. But our relationship with the Muslims is still, and I think that it will be always a good relationship between the Christians and Muslims and with other religions.
So you have some Muslim friends?
Yeah, sure, I have, yeah.
You talked about the electricity power cuts. Is water often a problem, the water supply?
You know that it's an essential thing, one of the important thing that for life, electricity and water and all these things. The problem is all these things are not provided in a adequate way. That make problems in the life of the persons. But it's not the first problem in the life of the Iraqi. In the life of the Iraqis.
What is then? What is the first problem?
The security, I told you that. Yes. The security is the first problem in the country. So we need this security to build the country then and to do another things.
Do you find when you talk to Iraqi people that generally they're happy that the US troops will be finally withdrawing at the end of this year, or do some fear the insecurity will worsen afterwards?
I think there is no difference. The American troops, if they go or no, because the responsibility of the security is our responsibility of all of us. We can make something for our country, all of us, if we can help each other, if we can take part of the responsibility of our country, we can do it.
OK, let's now turn the spotlight on Iraq's small Christian community. It's nearly a year since the bloody siege at Baghdad's Our Lady of Salvation Church, and that was an attack that killed over 50 Catholics. What is the mood of the Christian community 12 months on from that attack? It was a bit of a turning point, wasn't it?
It was really shock for us, because this is the first time that happened as a siege in this way, not just in a church. So for the small community of Christians that we have, it was very shock, and
they're still traumatized.
Yes, and there is many families after this have left the country.
You said that your own family decided to leave Baghdad. Was that right? Can you tell
us what happened? Yes, because my family, like other families, other many families, that they feel that there is a bad situation, which is not resolved. They decided, some families decide to leave the country. I'm talking about many families. They have left the country recently.
Do you know how many left after that church attack?
I don't know exactly the numbers, but there is many of them. They left Baghdad, especially this area, which is near to the cathedral of Our Lady of Salvation.
And how difficult is it to make a new life? You said your own family went up to the northern Kurdish region. How difficult is it to find a new life there? I gather there's, for instance, a very severe shortage of jobs up there. Is that true?
Yes, this is a kind of the difficulties that they face, that many families face in their new life, because everything is new for them. So if they go to other countries, they face another culture which is different from our cultures. They face a new life. They face many difficulties, especially for their works, because it's not easy to find a job there in other countries. Also in the north of Iraq, it's not always easy to find a job.
But do they feel safe there?
So it's there is a difference. Sure, there is a difference between the north and the capital, Baghdad. In both places, they still face difficulties, but it's different difficulties.
And when you talk to those Christians who are still living in Baghdad, are many of them considering leaving the country? What do most of them want to do?
It's a thing that is related to their situation, especially for the economic situation. Some of them, they have difficulties to leave the country because this reason. But there are some families, they wanted to stay. They want to stay in Iraq because they don't imagine how to leave it.
Because it's their homeland.
Yes, this is because it is the first reason, and because they want to stay as Christians in our country.
And presumably it's particularly the youth who want to leave, is that right?
Yes, because they need the future. They need to build their future. And it's difficult in Iraq now to build a good future, especially for the young.
And are Iraqis a bit frightened when they go to church now to attend mass after that attack? Has it made them more frightened of openly practicing their faith?
They are scared, yes. They are frightened, yes. But
they still go to mass.
They still have faith, and they still attend the mass and Christmas mass, or in the Easter mass. You can see all the churches are full. So it's like a challenge for the Christians to attend the mass. But they live also with their church, so they can't imagine themselves without their church.
So the faith of the people is strong.
Yes, so we can learn also from the faith of our people, of our Christians.
But you came from the northern city of Mosul. That has been a particularly difficult city for Christians. There have been many attacks there, as you know, the killing of an archbishop, a priest, many others as well. What's the mood like there?
There is no very big difference between Baghdad and Mosul from this point, because it's the same thing. Also, the people still thinking to leave the country and to go to other places or to move to the north. Just the same difficulties of Christians are still, maybe it's bigger in Mosul than Baghdad, but in the end, it's the same thing, it's the same situation.
So Overall, as an Iraqi, how optimistic are the Iraqi people, whatever their faith, about the future of their country? Is there a sense of optimism?
Some Iraqis that has left the country, they have the hope that one day they can return back to the country. So we have all, I'm the first one. I have this hope that many Christians, many Iraqis can return back to our country. And I think many people in our country hope that all the others come back to our country. We hope, all of us.
Do you think, as we've been saying, many, many Christians have left Iraq? The number of the Christians living in the country is now a third what it was in 2003. Can the church survive? Do you think? Are people worried about that?
I believe that our future at the end, it's in the hands of God. That's our faith. But I think it's difficult now. There is a risk for the future of Christians in Iraq before 2003, and now there is about more than half of the Christians has left the country, and this is a risk for the future of Christians' existence in the country. But at the end, we hope that the situation will be improved, and then we hope also that many Christians return back to the country.
I was speaking to Iraqi priest Father Albert Zarazia. The Vatican has launched a major initiative involving the pontifical charity Cor Unum and a number of Christian aid agencies to step up its relief operation for the victims of the famine and drought in the Horn of Africa. At a press conference last Friday, the Holy See shone the spotlight on the grave humanitarian crisis in the region, especially in Somalia, where 750,000 people are at risk of death from starvation. It said Catholic organizations have given some 60 million euros to aid the affected populations. Lydia Kane picks up the story.
It's a race against time to help the estimated 13 million people in the Horn of Africa who are in dire need of emergency assistance. In Somalia, Kenya, and Ethiopia, and surrounding countries, a major drought, conflict, and political instability has led to millions of people going hungry. On Friday, following a meeting with Christian charities on the situation, the president of the Pontifical Council Cor Unum, Cardinal Robert Sarah, presided over a press conference at the Holy See Press Office, where he reiterated the Holy Father's appeal for the international community to continue its commitment to helping those who are suffering. As well as representation from Cor Unum, the Pope's personal charity, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, sent a message of support to Friday's meeting, saying, "It is an agonizing indictment on the world to find ourselves once again staring into the face of famine." The gathering was also attended by a representative of the Archbishop. One of the relief organizations which is present in many of the countries affected is Catholic Relief Services, a member of the Caritas Network. Speaking at Friday's press conference, its executive director, Ken Hackett, said they were expanding their programs to help deal with the crisis.
In an immediate response to the situation facing the people in the Horn, including both Somalis in and outside of Somalia, and those who are living on the edge in other countries, we as a community committed ourselves to expand both our short-term programs, those immediate interventions, and our long-term commitment.
Another participant was the Apostolic Administrator of Mogadishu in Somalia, Bishop Giorgio Bertin, who said major political instability in that country has played an enormous part in the tragedy that is unfolding.
If the situation is in such a dramatic proportions in central southern Somalia, it is because during these last 20 years there have been perpetual conflict and the absence of a real central authority of the state. And this is causing a terrible problem over there to their own population. The international community and the Somali community, both locally and internationally, have not done enough. More can be done. We should put together as agenda the rebuilding of a country, the assistance to Somalia so that it may stand again on its own feet.
Already the Pope, through Cor Unum, has donated $400,000 to the crisis, and church collections have been taken up in countries such as Italy, Ireland and Germany. The Catholic Church is hoping, through generous support, that they can raise at least €60 million in order to give the people in the Horn of Africa a better tomorrow. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Another of the speakers at Friday's press conference in the Vatican was the Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis, Michel Roy, who described the famine in Somalia as a scandalous tragedy. I caught up with him just after the conference and asked him to elaborate on his remarks.
You talked about this as being a scandalous tragedy. Are you yourself surprised at how badly it has spiralled? And do you think really the whole international community should be hanging its head in shame?
Yes, I think we are. We should all be ashamed. We are ashamed because that already happened in the past. And it's not all of a sudden, it's not a volcano eruption or an earthquake which could not have been planned. It is a drought, and that drought was there, and it has come to a point where there is nothing left, you know, and people have to be helped to survive or have to go away to survive. And in Ethiopia and Kenya, in the regions that have been touched by this famine, almost famine, we reach the people now. So almost nobody is dying of hunger in Ethiopia or Kenya. But in Somalia, which has been out of the radar for too many years, you know, instead of investing in protecting the ships, there's a big military fleet in the Gulf of Aden to protect the boats passing there from the pirates. That has a very high cost. The international community should think of how helping the Somalis to restore a state and an administration that would take care of their people. This is essential. So when I say scandalous, it's because I think we've been closing our eyes and leaving the Somalis by themselves. And the result is maybe, as OCHA is planning, I hope this will be kind of, to say, electric shock for us, but 750,000 people are at risk of death now in central and southern Somalia. 750,000, that's incredibly high, even if it was. And the reasons are, it's complex, but mainly the fact that we have abandoned the Somalis to themselves.
And do you think that we can learn our lessons and prevent a similar tragedy in the future? Because we said after the 1984 famine, never again. And yet, here we are again.
Yes. Well, the lesson is that even if we said it is there again. Well, we all believe, and especially as Catholics involved in humanitarian and development work, that we can improve and people can convert. And the international community also can convert. A big crisis we are facing now, which has impacts on everyone. In the north, we hear a lot about it, but also in the south, shows us that we have to think of a different world. Personally, that the world is upside down. We have to restore a world where the human being will be at the center, and the economy and the finance will be at the service of the people. And this is the duty of all of us to reach that. And I think if we succeed in bringing humanity back at the center, then the Somalis will be better off. This is maybe a kind of utopia, but more concretely, there are many ways to help the Somali people and the Ethiopian people and Kenyan people to adapt to new patterns of climate has changed, and so they have to live in their countries under bigger pressure from drought and so on. But there are technical ways to come out of that.
How significant is it that the Anglicans and other Christian denominations are involved in this? It is a first.
Well, I understand it is a first here at this time, but locally Caritas and ACT Alliance, Acting Churches Together Alliance, which was created a few years back, led and still going on a common program in Darfur, which is called ACT Caritas program. So there are very happily opportunities to come together and work together as Christians. But even more important is when we come and work together with other faith-based organizations from the Muslim side, for instance. And in the case of Somalia or Djibouti, it is important to be together. As Monsignor Bertin was saying, it's a proof of our will and our need to live together. We are human beings created by God. There are different faiths there, but there's a common vision of humanity, and this has to be promoted.
I was speaking to the Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis, Michel Roy. This week, the international community marked the World Day Against Capital Punishment, and activists used the occasion to try to persuade countries who still carry out executions to join the abolition bandwagon. The Catholic lay organisation Sant'Egidio has long campaigned against the death penalty, and we contacted their spokesperson Mario Maraziti to find out more about progress in this field.
While the death penalty is sold as a way to restore humanity, is the ultimate inhumanity. So because it degrades the whole society to the level of the one who kills, and it degrades the public institutions, degrades the public opinion, it degrades the prison system that stops to be a rehabilitation system, and so on. So just to think about how many sides of inhumanity are related to the use of the death penalty is the educational theme of this year.
How dreadful are at times conditions on death row?
Well, we must imagine that all the closed institutions are at risk of compressing human dignity. When we start thinking of prisons, this risk is much higher. And when we think of a death row where people are there waiting for the day in which they will be killed, knowing or not knowing when they will be killed, because there are still some states that do not tell the people the right day. So every minute, every day could be the moment in which you will not be given food, but just death. So it is torture. The main problem of death rows, that torture, mental torture, is something that cannot be taken away from the concept and the practice of the death penalty, because you can die in your mind 1,000 times before dying, every minute, every year, or you may decide to die because you do not accept or you cannot bear this kind of mental torture. Then there are many, 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 many individual rights that normally on death row are not, of course, taken care of.
What inroads has the Sant'Egidio community made with regard to working towards the abolition? Where are we on this?
Well, we have been working hard and still are, accompanying many African states in the process to abolition. And in this moment, like Togo, Gabon, and so that we have had some successes. And in this moment, the African continent is probably the continent that is changing more fast on this issue. And at the same time, we are working at all levels. One is how to humanize the life in prison. Second level is how to create public opinion movements that can put pressure inside retentionist countries. And I do hope that this is this synergy between grassroots level and institutional level, Europe, that is a key actor, and we work hard with side by side with European Union. I think that this can give a lot of fruit, for instance, also in America.
As you mentioned America there, how difficult, though, is it to get a blanket ban when you have countries like the US, like Japan, like China, even Iran, who still continue this?
Well, I would say that there is a shrinking movement of the death penalty in the world. We have a continuous movement towards abolition even in these countries.
That was Mario Maraziti of the Sant'Egidio lay organisation speaking to Lydia O'Kane. Well, that's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme. But we'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.